Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and on the new 100.3 FM. Andy Bullbarge joined alongside Matt Douglas, and it's time now for our Budweiser's From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco as we welcome in Fox 8's very own John Telitz. JT, a pleasure as always to have you on, my friend. How are you today?
Doing fantastic. It's like a fall-like day, so excited for, obviously, Browns football and high school football, too.
We're going to get into all of that and then some, my friend. Let's begin with the Browns, though, and we'll talk about a position that's gotten a whole lot of fire since training camp began, and that's that wide receiver position. It's loaded to the gills with all kinds of talent, and there was a little bit of shifting going on there. Braxton Miller was brought in shortly after our last conversation last week, and more recently at the beginning of this week, the Browns have decided to part ways with Jaylen Strong. What do you make of those two moves?
Well, I think Jaylen Strong was a great story. His camp was going on. He was a reclamation project, a guy that had an injury, came back from the injury, seemed to be finding himself in the mix. But it had to be a case of the coaches and Dorsey and company thinking they could strengthen the whole receiver core by bringing in someone like Braxton Miller, who's had a little bit of history in the league and has that speed that they could at least experiment with getting him the football in short crossing routes and give him an opportunity to make a play the way he was able to do at Ohio State when he was playing that the wide receiver position versus when he was the QB. So it's still a super strong room. And you also want to look and see who can grab a spot now that the first 4 weeks of the season they will not have a guy that I have obviously assume, and I'm sure you do too, will be a part of the team. He's just being suspended for those four games, and that's Antonio Callaway. So they want to see who emerges. Maybe Braxton Miller can be one of those guys. He could be a return guy, perhaps. Freddie didn't discount that possibility a couple of days ago when we were at camp for his news conference, but he didn't come out and say that Braxton would be used in this final game against the Lions. In the return game. But we'll see. I think they're still kind of in a state of flux with the return situation.
Let's stick with that position for just another second here. How much should we make of Odell Beckham Jr. not necessarily playing much at all in the preseason? Certainly he's gotten plenty of reps in practice, and there are a lot of videos out there showing his highlight reel grabs and things of that nature. But it doesn't seem like we should be too concerned with him not playing in these preseason games.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Bull. And, I'm still looking for the first time in a game when Baker throws a football and Odell jumps up and catches it one-handed between his legs. I think that would be an NFL first, but you've probably seen that on social media. I'm not reading much into it. I'm not freaking out about it at all. These are two super professional football players dedicated to what they do. They've worked away from the team structure in the past. When they're out in California, they will work intently now once the preseason practices are over. And yesterday really was like their last preseason practice. And then Monday will be when they really get it going for game one against the Titans. I don't read too much into it. Neither does Freddie. And he brought up a good comment the other day about, you know, it's the reps that you're getting in the team structure that matter the most. And they really weren't into any game planning for the Titans or game planning for anybody for that matter up to this point. It's all been just working on getting the offense in, making it fluid for everybody. Now that the offense is in, now that they're getting ready for the regular season, in those practices, Odell will know the depth of his routes and where to be and what, you know, certain plays and where Baker's going to be looking for him. So I really don't see it as a problem and would not be surprised one bit if in the opener against the Titans, OBJ has a real big game.
Well, we go from one unit that is loaded to the gills with depth to another, and that would be the defensive line. Devereaux Lawrence is one of those guys that has really emerged in that group that is loaded to the gills with talent. He's certainly been one of the bigger surprises of camp, hasn't he?
He really has, and he's been very humble about the whole situation. He spoke with us a couple of days ago after Monday's practice and recounted back when he was asked by one of the reporters What was the turning point for you, and when did things start to work better for you out on the field? And he said it was an incident in an August 2nd practice when basically Freddie Kitchens said, raise your arm, number 99. These guys can't block you. They can't handle you. And he said at first he thought he was being called out, you know, like sent to the principal's office because being singled out for maybe tackling somebody too hard or whatever. But no, it was a compliment, and he said he really got a great deal of confidence from that, and he's learned to just play instinctually as opposed to, you know, really reading too much into things, and that's kind of slowed down his the way he was on the field. It's more innate for him, and he's having fun out there, and he realizes he's in a group of players that's super talented ahead of him in the front four, the starting front four. But he knows he's going to get his snaps. I don't know if you guys saw the quote on the news. It was pretty funny. They said, are you worried about getting enough snaps, you know, during the course of an NFL game with so much talent in front of you? And he said they all run out of oxygen just like I do. So he knows those guys are going to need their breathers. They're going to insert certain guys if they are in the mix to get some snaps, and he hopes to be one of those guys that gets in the game and has an opportunity to make a play. And from what we've seen so far, he just has a knack for getting to the quarterback or making a play. And he's had issues with injuries, and those things have kind of kept him from really developing into what he could ultimately be. So perhaps that will be the case this fall with the Cleveland Browns.
He'll be part of a rotation that has a lot of able and very talented bodies in it, no question about that. That should certainly help out the Browns down the stretch.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talk a lot about how talented that was that receiver room is, but you talk about that defensive line unit. That's about as talented and as deep that particular position has been in a very long time. Is it safe to say that's about as deep and as talented that position has been since the Browns returned 20 years ago?
Yeah. I totally believe that. I mean, you've got guys that all have pedigrees from the Pro Bowl, from Sheldon Richardson to Miles to Olivier Vernon, and the only guy that's really not been, you know, tabbed as a Pro Bowl player per se year in and year out, but I think has the potential to be, is Ogunjobi. And so you have four very solid players, and when they're on their game, what it does is it gives the defensive coordinator, Wilkes, the opportunity to be still attacking with four people, but not deviating from having enough individuals back in the coverage lanes to do their job. So when you've got four guys and only four guys, you don't have to blitz an extra person. You've got seven people back there taking care of whoever is coming off the line of scrimmage or out of the backfield. That's a great advantage. And obviously, as well as those guys can get after the quarterback, and with still seven guys back in coverage, there's going to be opportunities for quick throws to get out of trouble, and that'll be an opportunity for some interceptions for Denzel and some of the other guys, and it's just a perfect scenario. I think this year you're going to have Joe Schobert having a phenomenal season because he'll be a little cleaner at his linebacker position with the great guys up front kind of protecting him in some way, shape, or form. So it's a great recipe, I think. The defensive numbers this year, you know, how the analytics look as to how they perform play in and play out will show that this is going to be a very good unit.
Fox 8's very own John Telitz joining us here on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco. Well, we have to take a look at another unit here that might not be as talented or as deep at this point. You know, the kicking battle is something that we have followed throughout the course of camp. What do you make of Austin Seibert and the battle that's continued to go on, and it really seems like nobody's really emerged?
Yeah, he had a real good game in the third contest. He was 4-for-4 and hit a real long one. So I think he kind of edged a little bit ahead of Joseph, but we'll see. He's supposedly going to get all of the kicking scenarios on Thursday night against the Lions, and it'll be interesting just to see how they make their choice. If Joseph goes out and has a 3-for-3 night, then, you know, how much are you basing on how they kicked in practice? How much are you basing on how they kicked in the exhibition games? Because like Seibert, he was 4-for-4, and I think he missed a kick in a previous game, so he's basically 4-for-5 in the preseason. That's, you know, that's a pretty good, obviously, a ratio of successes against failures. And it will be very interesting to see if, again, Greg Joseph has a good game Thursday night, how they make that decision. I think the kicker of the Cleveland Browns is on the roster right now. I don't think we're going to see a case of them bringing someone in. And maybe we thought mostly that could happen as recent as a week or so ago. But I think right now, the kid from Oklahoma did a nice job, and he's got his confidence. They have a little bit more confidence in him. So we'll see what happens. But I'd have to think the kicker of the team is here in Berea right now.
We've talked a lot about Freddie Kitchens and this extraordinarily physical camp that he's conducted. And now that we're on the brink of week one, some of that will certainly be scaled back. But he's been talked about a lot, and I think there's so much likability with Freddie, not only as a coach, but certainly as an individual as well. He certainly had to battle some demons and leap over some hurdles along the way. You were telling me earlier, though, there's a pretty interesting story behind him getting in to the coaching profession. He was selling cars at one point.
He was. Once he, got out of Alabama, people forget that this guy was the starting quarterback for the Alabama Crimson Tide, and doesn't get any bigger than that. And I can recall seeing a Freddie Kitchens, back in the day, running the offense for the Alabama Crimson Tide. So he's selling cars and washing automobiles on Saturday afternoons, listening to Alabama football games, and starting to have a hankering for, did I give enough to this game? Is there something about this game that may draw me back into it? And he became a salesman, and he only sold for about 3 months. And he was the salesman of the month two out of those 3 months, so he was good at that as well. But he had an opportunity to get back in the game. It was at this little college, Glenville State, and one of his old associates came to him and said, I've got a job, and it pays $500 total. Do you want all the money up front now? Or do you want it in like $125 a month over the next 4 months? And he said, I could use the money right now. So he went to this school, Glenville State, and gave up the sales job. And he was doing well in the sales job. He said, we all laughed at practice the other day, he was at the point where he was selling cars so well, he could take his wife out to dinner quite frequently. And so, and if you're able to do that, you're doing pretty good. So he gave that up, made next to nothing, did everything at a small Division II school. He was even on the grounds crew because they don't have the budget in some of those smaller schools. And that's where he got his start. And that's a cool, story if he's a successful NFL coach. And so far, as an assistant coach, he's respected around the league, and he has risen without really getting out there and tooting his own horn in that respect. But once he got the head coaching job, he's very comfortable in his own skin, very comfortable self-deprecating, talking to the media, and give and take with a lot of the reporters. And I would think most of the regular reporters like the Grossies and the Jeff Shadells and Scott Tetrax and those people and Mary Cave and Daryl Ryder, all those people would give you the same kind of a vibe that they like the guy. He's personable. He talks to everybody on a one-to-one human basis. And so there's a lot to like with him, and I think part of his story, the fact that he went to and took a gamble and got back in the game and coached at this tiny school doing everything that was asked of him, just speaks more towards, the work ethic that he has and the love he has for the game of football. And, we know it's in the blood of pretty much everybody that's in the National Football League, but he's just a great case of a guy that went for an opportunity because he had that feeling in his heart that this is what he should be doing, and then it's starting to work out really nicely for him.
I think I know the answer to this question, but have you ever been to Glenville State down in Glenville, West Virginia?
I have not. No, I have not. How about you? Have you, Bull?
I've been there twice. I've called a couple of Notre Dame College football games there. The people of Glenville are very nice, but that is a really difficult place to get to because it is really kind of buried up there in the mountains. It is a challenge to get there, no question about that.
Well, wow, we got to talk sometime about just Glenville State. That's kind of cool.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a unique little setting, no doubt about that, but it can be very, very difficult to get to, no question. Well, this Friday, my friend, we love talking Browns with you, but we're talking a little high school football here as well. on Friday. You've got the very first edition of the Friday Night Touchdown, and you guys are bringing the commish back.
We are. Danny Coughlin is coming back. We thought he did retire, and he retired at the end of last season, and he was having some issues, some health issues that might keep him away from being with us beyond that year. But then he has really he's had some great upheavals or let's say upticks in his health state, and he's in fantastic shape. And he came to our bosses earlier this summer and said it would be okay if I came back. And naturally, in a split second, they all said, absolutely, come on back. We'd love to have you. So it's great to have Danny back. And we have Ken Carmen, the big fella from 92.3, the Fan. Kenny is going to be with us each and every Friday night. He'll be out covering games. And then yours truly and PJ. And I have to, before I go any further, mention Nick Kovach, who's the producer of Friday Night Touchdown and has been for many years. He's absolutely a wizard. You know how tough it is, Bull, because you do it as well. And, you know, scheduling games and coordinating with the coaches and the athletic directors and getting the rosters and finding out what the teams are like and logistics of games. And it's really a job that's difficult for anybody to handle. And Nick pulls it off like it's a walk, you know, walk in the park. And so we're really grateful to have someone like Nick Kovach running the show.
And we can't let you go without asking about the voting for games for the game of the week. Now, the voting goes through tonight, if I'm not mistaken. Who are some of the games you guys are looking at?
Well, some of the games that we're going to – Hudson against Solon is one of the games that's up for grabs on this. Painesville and Riverside, that's another one. Avon Lake and Avon, that is the third game. And then Garfield Heights and Shaker Heights. And if fans just go to Fox8.com and vote, our Friday Night Touchdown page, we always end the voting on Thursday nights at 9, and then on the 10 p.m. news when I'm doing the show, we reveal what the game is. So that's just one. The Friday Night Touchdown game of the week will be the winner of that voting, and then we usually get to like 19 to 20 games every Friday night, and it's the fastest 30 minutes I ever experience each and every week. It just flies by.
My guess is you guys sleep pretty well on Friday night and into Saturday morning, don't you?
We do it, and we just love everybody that is a part of the show, from the photographers to the producers to the technicians in the studio to the guys that's up in Skyfox filming games or shooting games from above. It's an incredibly coordinated effort, much like pro football or football on any level, with so many moving parts that have to go together. And that's why Kovach is a wizard, because as the night goes on, things are changing all the time. You get to a game, and maybe nothing really, you know, eventful happened at the game, or there was a weather issue where you had to leave and go somewhere else. We've had those weeks where we've had lightning and thunder, where they have to suspend play per, you know, OHSAA rules. I get that. And so there's a lot of, you know, thinking on your feet and handling the logistics of these games. And even while we're in the show, Nick is in our ears saying we have to trim the copy on this game, and then we're going to jump to the Euclid Glenville game after we do that, the, you know, the CVCA game versus BASJ or whatever. So there's a lot of tap dancing and adjusting that goes on, but the folks at home, for the most part, never are aware of it, because Nick just does a great job.
Great stuff. Well, looking forward to it on Friday night, no question about it. John, always a pleasure, my friend. Enjoy the conversation as always, and we look forward to doing this again next week.
Sounds good, Bull. You guys have a great one, and best of luck and best of health to all the kids that are playing high school football this week and the rest of the season.
Well stated, John. Thank you again very much. Again, that's Fox 8's very own John Telich joining us here on the Budweiser's From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenient Sunoco. We need to step aside and take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and on the new 100.3 FM.